for two aging mid-level Hollywood celebrities who think a podcast is a good idea and who ask the eternal question to fill the hole in their soul. Did we do it? Here they are, Cage and Kevin!
Hello, can you hear me?
You give me an option to leave meeting. But you're
hold,
recording.
That hold, seemed to be hold it. For plane.
A good
hold,
Brexit.
Hold for plane.
Hold what, mine? For plane.
Your plane, yeah.
Mm.
You can't hear that?
The plane flying over my house? Yeah, I can hear that. Thanks for pointing it out to me, though. For everyone at home, I live near an airport, Burbank.
Hollywood Burbank Airport.
We did, I think it's Bob Hope.
Yes.
He owned most of the valley.
Yeah.
And was a real son of a bitch, is what I heard.
He's a real son of a bitch. But back then it was almost a badge of honor.
Badge of honor.
He's a real bitch. Son of a bitch, that guy. Like with a smile, a wink and
can
a
you
smile.
Do, can you do some Bob Hope for us?
You know, that one's a little outside of the frame of reference. I'd have to hear some. What do you got? It's a little more.
For you listeners at home, Kevin is the man of a thousand voices.
I was just doing some Russell Brand pre-show for you.
What?
For you, remember? Yeah.
Why?
Kyle, you why ready to be on my podcast? You know that depression is not real. That you know they say it's a situation with your serotonin levels. Who came up with that, Kyle? Pharmaceutical companies.
Hold that.
That's my Russell Brand.
Is he? He's down on Big Pharma, I bet.
Yeah, he's down on all that stuff. Yeah, yeah. He wears a lot of beads, a lot of open shirts. Have you ever checked out his
he
YouTube?
Does. What is that? You know? Oh yeah, yeah. He talks really fast, so it's hard to really like. Well, the guy must be really smart because he's staying.
He's
a
got
lot
a
of
lot
staff.
Of right. He's got a staff though. I heard he's got writers. It's not coming.
Oh
just,
no!
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Mm.
I thought that was coming out of his butthole.
I know that's what a show business will have you believe. But David Letterman,
here I am.
I'm gonna blow
in
your mind.
Showbiz.
David Letterman had writers.
Yeah.
Leno, writers.
Wait, well,
hold on.
Yeah.
Jimmy Fallon, writers.
No, not Jimmy.
Even the greatest comedic mind.
Is he the best? Is Fallon the best?
I mean, he's the most affable. He's the most affable.
It seems like he's a hollow suit, though. It seems like he's just been a robot created for late night.
He's perfect for late night because he.
But isn't it too perfect? It seems like it's
well, he's the very thing that we joke about, like that Seth Rogen said, like you know when he
okay,
met.
He's
Kanye.
Not having as much fun as he is. He's demonstrating.
Yeah, I did see a clip of him and Olivia Newton-John singing "You Don't Wanna Wanna Wanna," and. He seemed really into it, but then I also noticed a tinge of sadness while
there's
he
always,
was.
Yeah, there's always. I think that's the booze. Remember, he's addicted to alcohol.
Yeah.
Remember, he was falling over all the time. He was getting drunk. He was having too much fun, but he had to drink to get there. And then he'd fall over, break his thumb, he'd be out of the show for a week.
You're remember saying he was drunk on the show?
Hey, listen. Listen, no. He had to keep the party going, I think.
Right. Well, you know and how then, it is. When you get off stage, I see you. You're like a whole different person when you get off stage. You're like, your eyes are, they're wide. You're kind of,
wow.
There's a glowing coming
well,
off
that
you.
That could be the mushrooms. That could be, that could be the Big Pharma. Those could be the pills I'm on.
Kyle, it's not real. It was serotonin.
It's, no.
It's not. It's created by Big Pharma. Get off
you know,
the pills, Kyle.
When you get something that works, just ride it. Just keep riding it all the way.
Just to the end. Kyle, I'm riding it to the end. Let me know if I'm beating the horse. Listen, we're going
to
take.
Now just switch to Charlie Watts just real quick. Just give me a little. Because it's so good.
Waltz, wasn't he kind of like a Beatle? No, that's a little
more. Play the drums.
Listen, yeah. Kyle, it's good to see you. Everybody, yeah. That was what we call a cold open. Here we are. Did we do it with Kyle and Kevin?
Surprise episode.
Did we do it? Underscore. We're back.
Yeah.
Oh, guess who's back?
Did we do it? Is back. Guess who's back?
Did we do it? Is back. Back. Guess who's back? Back. Well, here's the thing. Hold for play.
Kevin has been sending me a lot of Jerry Garcia videos on my DM.
Yeah. And I'm sliding into your DMs.
And each time he does, I'm like, why? Why did he send
me? I'm trying to convince you that he is actually a good guitarist. I know you don't believe so. So I try to find clips where I feel like he's jamming.
I enjoy Jerry. Okay. I might enjoy Jerry more than you even imagine. And yet, like that was a clip from 71.
Yeah, it was good. One drummer.
And you know what all I heard? Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I heard the one and I got, God, if there was just another drummer in there.
If they had just brought Mickey. Planet Drum. Mickey,
but that was after Mickey's dad tried to rip off the band. Am I wrong?
You're correct. He was the manager and that's what the song He's Gone's about. Yeah, he took the money and ran to Mexico.
I'm running with all the dead money going out of the country.
Well, the music business was the Wild West back then.
All my friends' money.
Yeah. Well, that's not the reason why. The fact that I send you Jerry Garcia DMs is not the reason why we've been out of the loop. You've been very busy with a little band we like to call Tenacious D. You've been on the road. You have an audio book that's come out called The Road to Redunction.
Redunction?
Redonkulous. No, Redunction. How are the numbers on The Road to Redunction?
Unfortunately, I have a gag order from Tenacious D Industries. Unless Jack is here, present, I cannot comment. I cannot...
Extol. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. He saw fit. My hands are tied. I wish I could go off on that band. In fact, I'm not supposed
to. You're supposed to say the band that shall not be is like Sirius Black.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The band that shall not be named.
You know what I saw though?
Well, the only reason I bring it up is because in that time, and I'm sorry, Jack, I know you're listening. I meant no harm. I'm here.
You see what I'm up against, Jack. You see what I'm up against.
Well,
go ahead.
Well, the reason why I brought it up was because we had someone on the books. We have a special guest today. And you were not available to speak to.
Who was that? Who was
Tanya?
Oh.
I don't know why I said it in two syllables. Tanya Raymond. Now, you might be familiar with Tanya from a little show called Lost, which ran from 2006 to 2010.
Oh, my God.
That's right. She was also
on a very big show.
She played Alex Rousseau, a very key character. She was also in a little show called Malcolm in the Middle. She played Jodi Arias in the Lifetime original movie feature Jodi Arias. And she and I met on a show called Goliath, written by a small scribe named David E. Kelly, starring Billy Bob Thornton. There's more to come. Kyle has a question. Kyle.
Confession.
Yes.
I don't think I've seen any of those shows.
You never saw my Goliath?
I think I tried on the first
one.
Dude,
I watched your hacks.
I know I had one scene, though. Over just your scenes?
Dan Barron, my agent, I know you're listening to this. Can you send over, Kyle, my scenes, please?
I am very curious. Who were you this time? Who were you?
I was Ned Baring, an agoraphobic... whistleblower who had to kind of take down a corporation who had committed some malfeasance.
So it was a triumph of conscience, really.
Well, I didn't want to because fear of repercussions, aka death.
That's the thing,
but Billy comes in and convinces me, well, you got to do this. You know, it's going to be all right, Ned. It's going to be okay. You can come to stay and you're going to do it. You know,
is that Billy Bob?
Yeah, it was a little fast for Billy Bob. He's a little more like laconic. Mm-hmm.
You do some Sling Blade for me? Could you do a Sling Blade?
That's all I got.
Just for everybody, Kevin had no idea I was going to bring up Sling Blade. And then there it was. Could you, it was just a little more. That's similar to my Chris Walken.
Oh,
no.
No. She was also on The Last Ship, The Big Bang Theory. She's got some big, she's got some stuff coming up that she told me about, which she's don't get
to. Well, I'm excited to hear it. I wasn't able to be there that time, but that's more just because I don't like guests in general.
You don't like guests. She's got a, she just shot a movie. Hold on, hold for plane. Hold for plane. Yeah. Man, there's a lot of planes coming in today. Sunday morning.
It's Sunday. People are traveling. They have dreams.
Where are they going? She just did a movie with Emile Hirsch called The Stenographer that's coming out soon. That's got a Coen Brothers. Oh, I thought it was directed by the Coen Brothers, but it's
you
a
wouldn't
Coen
think
Brothers.
A stenographer would be enough for a movie, but the Coen Brothers.
No,
you know what they can raise not, the level of anything.
It wasn't the Coen Brothers. It's Coen Brothers kind of thing. She wrote.
It's Coen-esque.
It's a Coen adjacent.
That was their vision for the piece.
That's what, you know, whatever you're describing, something just
well,
name
I
it.
Love them. I love the Coen Brothers. Sure. So even people trying to be the Coen Brothers may not be. It's interesting. May not be.
Yeah, she's also got a movie.
And it's called The Stenographer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great.
It's almost like.
What else? What
the
else?
The Court Reporter. Coming soon. Kyle's assistant coming soon.
That's my lovely assistant.
My lovely assistant. That sounds better. She's got a movie called Future Days, which is premiering at Cinequest this Saturday, the 20th, which actually has already passed. That was last night. But this episode's going to drop soon. And anyway,
why didn't
I have to talk with her without you. And I'm going to say right now, it went fine. I was okay.
Of course it did. You love talking.
I really
That's
do.
The reason for this show.
I do. I love talking to people.
Chatting with Kev. Well, should we roll it? Let's do this. I can't wait to hear.
Should we go to it right
Kim
now?
Kim has to say.
Who?
What's her name?
Kim.
What's her name?
Tanya Raymond. I'm sorry, Tanya.
Oh, her name is Tanya.
Yeah, Tanya. Kyle's a big fan. All right, let's go to it. Carter, can you roll it now, please? 5, 4, 3, 2. I say no, or did you eventually cast
no,
somebody else?
No, you didn't say no. No, we did. Remember, we did that great read through with Patti LuPone and everyone on.
Oh, that was your TV show. That I love that idea.
That was a TV show. I mean, yeah. I'll cast you and everything. I just have to get something out in the world. You know?
No, you made really a film fun. Though about that. No, that was fantastic about a woman who is. Can I say I don't want someone to steal the idea, but she's,
no,
I
have a come on. No,
no, we have a huge listenership. Somebody out there of the 600 people who listen may. Grab
lot.
Your idea and run for the run to Hollywood. But it was about a woman who works for a meal.
Yeah, she gets
Angels on
that's
Wheels.
Right.
What was it called?
Mm-hmm. Meals on Wheels. Or a version of that. And she ends up it's about her misadventures becoming kind of friends with the not so senior community on welfare and sort of
My guy wasn't a senior though. What are you was
he
I
wasn't
a senior?
Though.
No, for the Jesus
God
Christ!
Forbid. No, Kevin.
Is that
of
why
course
you cast
not.
Me? Jesus. Listen, I just read for something.
Young.
I read for something where the guy was supposed to be 40. All right. And Patti LuPone was there. She was playing one of the characters, and I was way too. I think I embarrassed myself. I was so complimentary. I was like, Patti.
No,
I'm such a
she's
big fan.
So, she's awesome.
Patti LuPone, Broadway
star.
You
didn't embarrass yourself at all. You were great.
Well, I mean, just in terms of how effusive I was. I have this thing where, like, if I meet people that I like now, I just tell them because
I'm beginning to be that way too.
Yeah.
I think I spent
people.
So long being so uptight and so worried about the impression I was making. And I met so many amazing people that, frankly, if I just opened my big mouth and said I really love them, probably would have, I don't know, you know, I could have kept in touch or developed a nice relationship. It's so stupid. What kind of weird, like, code am I living by? Who gives a shit?
You're trying to be too cool for school. I used to be like that too. Like, oh yeah, I know who you are, Tom Hanks, but I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, we're let me together. Ignore everything you've ever done and not call attention to the one thing that I'm obsessed with, which is your talent, your career, everything that you've, you know.
Especially when you're working, especially when you're working with somebody on a peer level. It was like when we met on the show Goliath with the great Billy Bob Thornton. And you were so fantastic in that. You played a Brittany Gold. Is that right?
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of a woman of the evening with a heart of gold. Is that why she was named Gold? Spoilers, towards the end, quickly exited that profession, I feel
very
like.
Very quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a very early story point. She was quite bright.
She did it. She moved. It was very brief.
Yeah, it was very brief. And
you know, once a hooker, always a hooker. It stays with you. You know what I mean, Kevin?
I don't.
You can't undo what's been done.
Did you tell Billy and or Mr. Hurt, William Hurt, who just passed away? Did you tell them how much you admired them?
Not in so many words. I'm sure I tried to intimate it throughout the course of, you know, 5 seasons. Most backward way possible, at least with Billy. I mean, I hope that it's so tough because you have a short window of time. It's kind of like when you first meet someone and you don't quite catch their name, you've got like maybe a week to keep asking them what their name is. And there's no offense taken. No. You solidify the name, it's in your memory bank, and you never have to feel weird about it. If you miss that window, you're an asshole. You have to keep pretending you know who they are when you don't, or you don't remember. And it creates so much anxiety. It's unnecessary. And then, you know, who knows? Why? What's the point?
I feel that way with the neighbors that I walk around in the neighborhood with. There's some people I've known for like 17 years. I'm like, it's too late to ask their name.
It's so weird. It's too late.
Yeah. Just hey, guy.
Pretend to ignore each other.
Wave. Hello. They know my name. It's too late now for me. Unless I introduce, I do. If I have a friend with me, I'm like, this is, and then they introduce themselves and then I get the name. It's the classic move.
That's the best.
But I know what you mean in terms of the professional situation. It's too late at that point. I remember when I met Victor Garber, like the very first day on Alias, I told him, huge fan. I saw you in, you know, I mentioned every play that I saw him in. I saw him in Art with Alfred Molina, and I told him how much I enjoyed it. And he was like, well, thank you, my boy. Thank you. You know, I was a boy then, so he could refer to me as such.
He's English. Is he English?
No, but he has kind of that's kind of his, he walks around with a bit of a.
He does.
Yes, everything is good. And then he was so effusive and lovely and positive. And then as soon as the camera started rolling, he was like, oh, okay, my boy, we're about to go. And then it became Jack Bristow. And now I'm Jack Bristow. He would just switch on a dime.
We're the ones that are we're the ones with the problem. I mean, obviously as a profession, we're actors, we do things for a living. People can comprehend that there can be two versions. There's the version that forgets you're a fan of the work and can just act in the scene with you. And then there's the everyday life. Like I can be, you know, I'm aware of what I've accomplished. You can be a fan and we can still work together. Those two things can exist at the same time.
Yeah. It's, and I think our, Billy, I mean, well, you also see like with Billy, I don't know if you had this experience, like he was the most relaxed actor I've ever worked with. I loved working with him. Yes. Very totally. Present, right? Listened. But then he would tell me how much neuroses he had and like anxiety, because I was like, oh, Billy, you want to get a cup of coffee? I'm going to grab a coffee. He's like, oh, no, man. You know, I only have one in the morning because, you know, I'm anxious as it is. I'm like, you're anxious? You seem like the most calm actor I've ever run across. However, he felt like he constantly had to work on the script and justify that he had won 2 Academy Awards for writing for Sling Blade. Yeah. And, you know, he was talking about the script and talking about all the rewrites that were happening in season 1 and those secret meetings inside the trailer. And he was like, you know, I want an Academy Award. They should be listening to me. I'm like, yes, I know.
Remember that.
I know. Yeah. Was that happening? Because I was only in the first season. Did that continue to happen with the constant rewrites?
No, because some things changed as it went on. But you know, I had
different showrunner too.
I had the exact I had the same exact same conversation with him, one of our first scenes that we ever shot together.
He told you, like, he won an Academy Award.
No, he told me that he was like crippled with
anxiety,
not being too forthcoming, anxiety, and
not listening to this,
and how nervous he was to do this scene and to act. He said something like to act in this scene with me. I don't think he meant it like with me in particular, but just the scene in general. And I probably took it as a compliment or thought it had something to do with me, which it probably didn't. But I remember saying exactly what you said, which was, you're nervous.
Yeah.
I was terrified.
Everybody's nervous, it turns out.
I guess, but you know, we're all going through the same shit.
I saw John Lennon being on the airplane. I was flying back from my sister's wedding, and he was talking about, someone asked him this. He goes, you ever get insecure? He's like, well, you know, as long as you're working, that's when you're not insecure. You know, it's the work. You know, if you're not working, you get insecure. You're thinking too much about what you did. And I only did that story so I could
It's really good. No, I was there. I was there.
I felt like you were right there with me. And it's kind of true.
I'm sorry if I'm not too quick right now, Kevin. Everything you say kind of like bounces back to me. And I feel like there's a little bit of a brain delay.
No, you're doing great. You're really doing great. So you're working with those guys on the show.
This is what I'll say about Billy, which is funny. I think it's that interesting phenomenon that you're describing, is that it seems, you know, I think when people say of actors of note that are, you know, really accomplished, that are like tremendous actors and super supremely gifted, and they say things like you just said, what we're talking about, like so relaxed, so easy to get along with, makes the whole thing like feel like it's nothing, seems like it's off the cuff. Like, I actually think all of that, it's interesting. It just shows how unselfish of an actor he is. I think all of that is really truly designed to make whomever it is that he's acting with comfortable enough to make it the best it can be. And maybe that's a survival thing within the scene or an effort to make it as great as it possibly can be. Maybe that's a protective thing for him too, but it's like, it's so outward. It's like everything about his energy is designed to like make you feel good. Which is 100%. Interesting. That seems so not an interior exercise in acting. It's, you know, Christ, it's like you spend so much time trying to get out of your own fucking head so that you don't, you know, so it's not always about you. But I noticed that with Billy, and you don't get it that often. But I think it probably requires a tremendous amount of effort. And maybe for him, oh my God, this is my Jungian, not Jungian, but my psychoanalyst analysis of this, but who knows what he's thinking. Maybe that frees him in a way, because then he's not so focused on this. But I don't know.
No, I think you're right, because I learned long ago that
it's not
the
about
better
you.
The perform. Well, I'm still learning that. But that the especially when I had kids, I was like, oh wait, you mean I'm not number one? The if you place if you focus on the other actor, whether you're trying to get a reaction out of them, you go to the Mamet School of Acting, you have an objective, you're trying to, you know, use some sort of action to achieve a reaction, or you're just listening, your performance will inevitably be better. Because I don't know if you've noticed over the years, especially, I mean, on stage, yes, but like when you, of course, but when you watch back something you've done, oftentimes they'll use the take of you reacting honestly, because they're sitting in the editing bay and they're like, oh, okay, that seems like a real moment. That seems like a real moment. That reaction is a real moment. You know, the real moments occur often when you're just listening and it's not this super prepared, rehearsed, you know, execution of something you did the night before. Of course, you should be prepared, but he's prepared. But I feel like he also just kind of learns it and then he lets it go. And that's really, I know he learns it, but then he's able to be present, listen, let it go, react. Because I remember I was playing this guy who was agoraphobic and he was in his head. And
your character was so great.
Well, he was right there. He's looking at me and he's staring right at me like, it's all right. He's trying to, he had an action. I'm going to try to get you to help me. And I felt it and I was resistant, but he wore me down. Billy, his character's name is Billy, which was weird, but
it was weird.
Do you know what I mean? So completely. It's just good. It's good acting at the end of the day. He realizes that the better the actor with him is, the better he will be.
But it's interesting because he has a very particular kind of rhythm, a very particular kind of way of speaking, and a sort of energy that, like, you know, energies and unspoken. Oh, God, who the fuck this? Maybe this is so obnoxious, but I mean, you know, we're on the topic of acting,
people tune in. They want to hear about the acting.
You know,
so tell me what you're going to say. Yeah,
you're so hypersensitive and attuned to every little micro feeling and vibration of energy and whatever it is that's going on in on set when you're filming something. It almost seems like it's like a state of hyper awareness, probably because of nerves and adrenaline, and the cameras are rolling and you're inhabiting some character. You're sitting across from someone that you may or may not be intimidated by, or that you're kind of have a crush on in the context of the scene, or not saying in this particular, you know.
I wasn't saying me. I'm just saying, who did you have a crush on? William Hurt?
All of these, like, kind of like this, like, bubbling of energy that, like, doesn't, that almost feels like grander than what you experience in your regular life, because everything is hyper exaggerated, right? Or at least that's our perception of it.
Right.
What I'm trying to get at is,
it focuses you within the context of the
right. But with lesser actors that are kind of wayward in their direction, or that I don't think are like as like gifted or strong, like somebody not as good as Billy, let's say, you know, you can get influenced by their speech patterns and all that crap in like a negative way that will make you do the wrong thing, that will make you react in ways that it's sort of mimicking or parroting kind of their patterns in a way that has nothing to do with your character. And if you're nervous or insecure or any of that crap, all that feeds into it, and you start to kind of, you're kind of imitating what they're doing, and it's not right for your thing, for your person, your character, your being, whatever.
That's
with Billy, even though he had such a strong presence and essence, there was something about acting with him or being in the scenes with him where you didn't get sucked into that in a way that didn't make sense for you. He still gave you all the freedom and space to like be your character. It's very interesting. I've been on the other side of it where like some dickhead actor, pretty kind of like, I don't know, effervescent and over the top in their performance, or like quiet and demure and barely speaking and boring, would pull me into those fucking patterns. And I would come back home thinking, what the hell did I do? Why did I let myself be influenced by that way?
Are you talking about Frankie Muniz?
No.
On one of your early jobs. Let's circle back to the beginning.
Oh my God.
Hold on. Wait a minute. I agree with you. Yes, you can easily. Yeah. His way, his approach allows you to create and stay true to whatever you've developed, while he's so confident in his creation. At the same time, it's not ego driven. It's just kind of,
but then by his own admission, he says that he isn't, and he's racked with anxiety. It's so funny, our perception of people. We could be we're very wrong a lot of the time.
Well, he's racked with anxiety, maybe, you know, let's get him. Well, here's the thing. I have a surprise for you. We have Billy in the waiting room. Come on in, Billy. Come on in. No, we don't. So wait, you were born. Goliath is a great show for those who haven't seen it. Season one is the best. It's the only one I was in.
A lot of people do think season one is
It got a little weird with the guy, the amputee.
I think we know what.
The amputee season. That kind of freaked me out a little. But then I loved the last two seasons. I felt like it was back on track. So you were born in LA like me. We're both Angelinos.
Woo! Yeah.
Not a lot of us.
Aren't you a Valley boy?
I'm a Valley boy.
Yeah. Why are we even talking?
Christ. My mother still lives in the same house I grew up in. You're saying locals only, bro? Locals only?
I am, yeah.
Malibu?
Yeah, West Side.
I used to get yelled at. We'd go to Zuma and they'd be like, locals only, bro. I'm like, what? Sorry, we came from Encino.
The third turf, man. You from the Valley?
Yeah, what up, Val? Anyway.
Yes, I grew up. I was born at Cedars-Sinai.
So was I.
Uh-huh. I remember. But
I'm older than you. I was born in the downtown Cedars-Sinai. You were born you were born the same when my kids were born, which is in West LA. That's not West LA. I'm sorry, West Hollywood.
West Hollywood.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Across like from Jerry's Deli. Yeah. I don't know why I had to say that.
Is Jerry's Deli still around?
Yeah.
Whoa. Is Jerry's Deli still around?
Jelly's Deli. I don't know. It might have closed. Pandemic.
What about your Valley location? Is gone.
I think it's gone. Yeah. Nobody wants the pastrami sandwiches, the $17 sandwiches anymore. It's too expensive for the millennials.
Let's be honest, though. They were never really that good. I mean, simulate the pastrami sandwich or your real good deli food from New York never really worked in LA. It's a lot of things that LA tries to copy about New York. It just doesn't get right. And I don't even fucking know New York.
I was like, what do you mean? You grew up here. Settle down there. Easy over there. Jesus. Oh my God. Some LA bashing. Self-hated, self-hating LA Angelina. 1988.
I was born in Cedar Sinai.
1988.
And I grew up on the West Side. So I've been in West LA my whole life. Mm-hmm. My mother is French. I went to a private French school called Lycée Français, which is also in West LA, Pico location.
Yeah. Uniforms? Was that like a uniform school for the kids?
Uniforms, yeah. Buttoned up, collared, white shirt, navy blazer, pleated gray skirt, and knee-high socks.
I always wish I had a uniform because then it's like, I don't have to decide what to wear. Mm-hmm. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's not what you think. Well, oh. I mean, it's democratic in that sense. There was a couple of funny things about my school. Yes, we had uniforms every day. If you were a messy person that was disorganized like me as a kid, you'd think you would have no trouble finding your outfit to wear in the morning to get dressed. Could never find it. Was missing the shirt. Couldn't find the socks. Couldn't find the skirt at the same time. It was like a constant.
You sound like my daughter with the softball uniform. She's like, where are my socks? I'm like, I don't know where your socks are. Yeah.
So there were no ways to differentiate yourself like from the pack. So the really pretty, like popular girls would sort of make little accoutrement adjustments to their outfits. Rolling the skirts like as far up as you possibly could get them, getting knee-high socks that were like maybe a little cuter looking than like the standard issue military grade cotton socks they made us wear.
You weren't one of you one of the popular kids? You were the theater nerd. Is that what you're saying?
I was kind of a nerd, and also I began working so early that I couldn't give a fuck about like my social status at the school.
How did you start working as a kid? Where did that? Did somebody find you at the mall, like you know, sipping a malted, like the classic Hollywood story?
Ovaltine. Yeah.
How did you get started in the business?
Well, my school was, so none of my family ever did it. It wasn't even like, we had no concept of what any of that meant.
Right.
My school was pretty like academic focused. It sort of followed a very strict like French learning program.
Yeah.
1 year we had a drama class it was our one extracurricular that existed. It was in fourth grade and they were doing The Wizard of Oz as a play. And it was like a high school play, but I was in middle school. I was a little kid. I must have been 9 years old, 10 years old.
Yeah.
And the girl who played Dorothy, like wanted to fuck off and, you know, get high with her boyfriend or whatever, dropped out of the play and they needed somebody to play the role. I ended up
getting cast. She had no worth ethic, that kid.
No. Getting cast in it. And then there was an agent there. I mean, I had no idea what I was doing, but I was like imaginative and could memorize stuff and love that movie. It was one of the only movies I think I'd ever seen at that time. I didn't watch much TV as a kid. And then I signed with an agent after that and just started auditioning. But my parents,
because you were in Wizard of Oz and you were just
Dorothy
like a cute,
in The Wizard of Oz.
Dorothy, but you were just like a cute, precarious kid.
I was like kind of imaginative and sort of like dreamy and quiet and like to read and, you know.
And then so you started auditioning and did you love it as a kid or were you just like, what is this?
You know, yeah, what I mean? Like, I loved it. I was very like, I had a really good work at like, I was a little militant little, like I knew that
you're still that
I
way.
Had to do a good job.
I saw your cards on the wall with the script you're writing. Is there a part for me in the new script? That's really why we're doing this. I want to know.
That's a good question, actually.
Yeah, there better be. God damn it. I'm very big in Australia. Turns out like Namibia, I get a lot of fans messaging me. I swear to God, from African countries.
Really?
Well, because I look at I look at the messages to make me feel good about myself. Yes. And there's a lot of people that message me. So hello to all my fans in Africa.
You know, it's funny, like you can on Instagram, it's really interesting. It's actually like a demographic breakdown of the people that like your photos or send you messages or make comments.
Yeah. Where's the most that you get?
Mexico.
Brazil. Oh,
Mexico City. Sure. So males from the age of like 18 to 23 in Mexico, basically, is 99% of that, which is wonderful. I really, you know.
The younger dudes like you.
A lot of people think, yeah, Raymond or, you know, yeah, Ramon or whatever.
You're Mexican, Spanish, yeah.
Or Mexican.
Yeah. By the way, French. We're here to clear this up. Tanya is French and Jewish, Polish Jew.
That's right, Hungarian Jew.
Yeah, Hungarian Jew. Oh, I said Polish on your Wikipedia, but maybe we need to. Can we get the Wikipedia people to change that, please?
Especially now, in light of Ukraine, people should know that there's a difference. That's right. Yeah,
Jewish. Eastern European Jew, as am I. That's right. We have a lot in common. That's Eastern European Jews from the Valley. All right. Sorry, Jesus.
L.A. County. Let's be specific.
So what was your first, was Malcolm in the Middle your first thing that you did?
I did one episode of a show called Providence, and then like very briefly, Melina Kanakarides as a little girl in flashback, and then I did Malcolm in the Middle. And that, Malcolm in the Middle was one of the other shows. Well, it was another show as a kid that I watched because it was on the air. There were very few other like popular shows for kids, like in my age range. And I was in love with Frankie Muniz, in love with him. Like I had pictures of him on my desk at school that I cut out pictures of his face from like teen magazines and like printed them out. So I got the role.
Did you bring hello, Frankie?
No, but I was such a weird, I mean, I'm sure I was like completely obsessed with the kid, and he was, you know, a couple years older than me. I must have been 12 years old, right? Or 11. And their photos, like behind the scenes photos of like when I was in a couple of those episodes of me like hugging him and him like trying to push me away. I mean, it was really like,
wow.
I mean, he must have thought I was obsessed. I thought we were going to get married. I mean, that's really, in my mind, that was a natural progression.
You know what? It just seemed like a sign from God. That because we've got Frankie Muniz in the Zoom waiting room. Come on in, Frankie. Hey, I just drive race cars now. I don't have to anymore. Yeah, crazy. That's Frankie Muniz. Well, I think you made enough money.
And as a kid, like, I didn't even really know what TV shows were.
You'd obviously seen that show, but like, did people recognize you at all, or just maybe the family were like, oh my God, congratulations. Do you know what I mean? It was kind
what
of,
do you mean?
Did other kids be like, oh, you're the girl from, like, that must've been weird. Like you start getting recognized as a 12-year-old.
I had no idea. I mean, you know, I was at a weird school.
Yeah.
Like French people, you know, they're never going to call attention to anything at all. So like, I had no idea, really. And I was really focused on the work, like ever since a little kid. It's funny, like I understood the rules of the thing and the work, like just being able to do it mattered more to me than anything, and that hasn't changed.
I always like to say, like, people like you are in it for the right reasons. I mean, like, I meet actors,
but I never decided that. It just, you know, happened. As a kid, you're not aware of those kinds of things, you know.
But I feel like now, like I met you, I'm like, this actor is really cares about the process of what she's doing, you know. And not everybody is like that. I've been doing this for 26 years. I've met a lot of people. Yeah, no, I know. I started.
You were this way too.
I started when I was 7. No, I know. I didn't. I think I recognize it because it's the way I am. And I think when I started working, I thought, well, everybody's going to have a great work ethic and everyone's going to be fully committed and everyone's going to be in it for the right reasons. But unfortunately, that's not the case. So when I meet someone like you, I'm like, we're going to be friends, because I really appreciated how seriously you took it. You know,
there was a lot of people like that on Goliath. Was really nice. I think throughout the years too, like a lot of performers that had that
real energy. Actors. Yeah. Especially that first season, man, which I don't know. It's the best season.
My God, do you realize how long ago that was? I have pictures in my phone of my like vanity selfies. Like I remember actually the morning that I met William Hurt was my first day on set, and it was his first day too.
Yeah.
And I was, this was in 2015 or 2016 when we shot the pilot.
Yeah.
The first pilot, because we did it a couple times and it went
right. You guys reshot the pilot. Yeah. And that's crazy.
It was so crazy. I was wearing this like net mesh two piece, like BB, like mall outfit, stripper, prostitute clothes.
I remember that outfit.
And then I go and sit in the trailer. It's like 5:42 in the morning, like early.
Welcome to Hollywood. It's
like everybody's first day. And we're in this, like at one of the studio lots, but like in like a subterranean basement where they had set up the trailers. And I walk in and Hurt is there because, you know, he had a lot of prosthetic makeup for all of his like
scars,
special effects stuff. Yeah. And that first year we're all seeing the same trailers. And I was looking at him. On the we're sitting on opposite ends of the trailer. I didn't know what to say, and I said, "Hi, I'm Tyler."
Kiss of a Spider Woman.
He looked at me.
He was.
He won an Oscar for that.
He looked back.
He looked at me and then looked back and looked at me again and then asked me if I believed in God. And then that was his first question to me. And I was like, "It's 5:45 in the morning."
Yeah, come on, bro. Come on, bro. That's not the question you want to ask someone in the first
thing. Even spoke this. So wild.
Wow.
So wild.
Do you believe in God? All right. We got to get to the big, I'm going to say the big break, maybe the career changer, a little show written by a friend of mine. Well, became a friend. Damon Lindelof. Yes. Well, and I guess the pilot was J.J. Abrams. I remember a show called Lost. I remember when I met, I was on set on Alias, and Damon was, this guy Damon was wearing a Star Wars shirt walking with J.J., and he stopped me to say, they stopped to introduce me, and he was like, "Oh, I love the show." I said, "Great. Oh, what are you, what's going on? What are you guys doing?" "Oh, we're meeting about this show about a plane crash on an island. And yeah, we're kind of talking about it." I was like, "Oh, good luck with that." Yeah, I swear to God.
Sounds great.
Like, sounds terrible. And no, I was like, "What, like Fantasy Island? Like, what is it?" And I was like, "Okay, cool, man. Very nice to meet you." And then, of course, it became like, you know, a monster hit. And that pilot was like the great. I just rewatched it with a friend of mine because she had never seen it.
So did I.
Over the Pando. Really? So tell me how you, I remember that. So tell me, how did you get, you just audition? Obviously, those were in the days where we weren't putting ourselves on tape. So you went in, was it April Webster that cast?
Yeah.
April's the best. She loves actors.
Also Alias, right?
Yes. Well, originally it was Megan McConnell did the pilot. And so I didn't read with April. She ended up doing the rest of this thing, though. Megan just did the pilot. I think Megan's out of the business now, but we're friends on Instagram. What's up, Megan?
I really like these. I mean, I miss so much that it's funny. Like, it's something
having support,
you
know, in the room,
process that you dread, but like, I really like those women, like Webster and some of these, like, God, even, you know, Libby and the women who cast Goliath, like, have Libby been Goldstein. Around. Done this for a long, long time, and it's an interesting relationship between casting director and actor. But anyway, I just auditioned. I think they were really looking for somebody
like Rousseau. How old were you?
Like Danielle's daughter, although none of that was public, but I think that was the idea at the time. I was 17 when I got cast. I turned 18 when I went there.
Had you seen the show at that point or no?
I'd never seen it.
You're like Billy. You've never watched TV. You're like Johnny Depp in this trial that he's in. He's like,
exactly like I hear
that the Pirates of the Caribbean is a lot of people saw it. I've never seen it.
I don't know. What was I watching at the time if I wasn't watching Lost? Good question. I was an idiot.
Well, what season did Lost, were you on? You were on the
I
second
I came
season.
In at the end of season two.
Mm-hmm. Two. Yeah.
I began at the end of season two. I guess it just started, but it was a pretty big hit at that time. I remember the one.
It was a monster.
I turned it on just to see kind of what it was about. Before I'd ever, and it was just the scenes between Jin and the Korean couple.
Oh yeah, amazing.
Daniel Kim and Eugene, like in a scene together, and the whole thing was in Korean.
Favorite
and I said, "My
characters.
God, how do Americans are watching this now? How
this is in Korean?" Well, they were the only couple that didn't speak in English, so it made. But that show took a lot of risks. Yeah.
So I had no idea.
You flew out to Hawaii. Yeah, had you ever been to Hawaii before?
Never. It's my first time. No, never had. And I thought, it was like the whole thing felt like a dream from the beginning. I'd never been in a place that was so beautiful.
Did your mom go with you because you were 17? You probably couldn't go on your own.
I wasn't emancipated, but I had some kind of a work, like a GED work permit thing. And I graduated from high school early. So like I was able to go like alone. And anyway, my mom was always like, if you're going to do this, you better fucking be an adult. Otherwise, you know, prove yourself, because I'm not going to babysit you through the whole thing. But very proud, obviously, you know, mom.
Yeah, of course.
But she did come eventually, yeah. But in the beginning, yeah, it was like heaven on earth. I couldn't, it was, it looked exactly like a postcard. It was as beautiful as, I couldn't believe. It's funny with Lost. I don't think Lost would have been what it was if it hadn't shot there. Yeah. I still can't fathom that this was on network television. When I watch that pilot again,
it's insane.
I think, how the hell did they shoot 23, 24 episodes a year on film? I mean, think about Alias, same thing, right?
Yeah.
You're doing hour long episodes.
I feel like they switched to digital on Lost towards the end, though. No, never. Last season? Because that was right around the time digital was happening.
We said it was film until the end. Yeah.
Film until the end. Man, I mean, like, I was reading this article about Breaking Bad, which was on film, and then the network wanted to shoot Better Call Saul on digital, and Vince Gilligan said no, absolutely not. And then they showed him a side by side comparison, color
correct. He's like, I can't tell the difference.
I can't tell the difference. All right, so it's really how you light it. But the early days of digital, when you watch some television shows right at the beginning, you're like, this kind of looks like an adult film. You know what I mean? Like, because it wasn't poorly lit. I mean, it was poorly lit. They didn't quite figure out how to do it. But I mean, Lost looked great the whole time. Just for some reason, I thought it was the last season was right. They switched.
I could be wrong, but I almost, I mean.
It did have more of like a blown out look that last season. Like it wasn't.
It might have.
Yeah, because I just watched it again and I was like, oh, it looks a little less three-dimensional.
I don't know if I was
only to the untrained eye. I'm not saying it was didn't look good.
I mean, spoiler, you know, but it's been a couple of years. I died in season 4 and came back.
Wait, what?
I'm not 100% sure that I was in the last season, maybe in the beginning.
And why weren't you in the end in the church?
I know.
Why didn't they bring you back for that? That was when all the characters came back.
I watched that pilot and I'm like, this is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably wasted on me at the time. I had no concept, which maybe was good. But the funny thing about working on it and acting on it was the fact that it was all shot there. I mean, it would never have been what it was if it had been anywhere else. If we'd shot it in LA the cast and the crew and the show making, even though it was like a huge success at the time, was like very isolated, very separate from all that. So it never really felt like a job, kind of similar to Goliath. And I think with Billy's energy and the energy of all of us, like working on the show together, like.
The whole season was done before it aired. So you don't know the reaction. But with Lost had already been on, but you're saying that you weren't receiving any sort of reaction because you were just in the bubble.
And everybody was to a certain extent. I think that's like another reason why it was so great, because it wasn't like self-referential. It was all done. I mean, because it was like so separate and so isolated from like the business and all that, you could kind of disappear more into the story. And I think it gave that feeling of realness and magic and mystery and all the cool things that people love about the show. But like, I remember shooting sequences where there'd be like 15, 16, 25 of us cast members in these big, big, huge scenes pouring torrential downpour of rain, like in the middle of the jungle.
Rain machines.
With all this real rain and fake rain. Rain machines wearing scuba suits, like under our clothing, getting poured on and rained on for like 15 hours straight. And then, you know, reloading the camera with film, like every 2.5 minutes for these long takes.
Roll out. Yeah. You're like, are you kidding me? It was in the middle of my take.
Camera guys hiding under palm trees, like with like plastic tarps with like, you know, wild, like pigs and animals and shit, like running around in the background, like just like trying to reload the rolls of film. And a couple times I remember, so the camera guys talking, we had to come back and shoot portions of the finale episodes. And this is like a couple years in. Because, you know, they would also have to ship the rolls of film back to LA from Hawaii.
Yeah.
The States.
Mainland.
basically the States. Yeah. Mainland.
Well, I guess Hawaii is a state, but.
And a couple of, wouldn't think you were there, especially back then.
Yeah.
A couple of times they would, the film had been X-rayed. So there would be like weeks, like days of shoot lost.
Yeah. No. I mean, destroyed. Are you kidding me?
We had to go back and reshoot. Yeah.
The rain stuff you had to reshoot.
Not the rain stuff in particular, but I remember big finale sequences when they were like ultimate secrecy, like didn't release scripts, like wouldn't tell anybody what was going on. We would shoot finales sometimes for two months straight, the two finale episodes.
Or some, I'm sure some of the actors were pissed.
It was just,
it is what it is.
But I think it really had a profound effect on everyone involved, especially the actors that were there, you know, for the whole show. I mean, it's just, what a cool piece of art. What a cool series. It's just
awesome. What do you remember any particular moment acting wise that felt like you had a 17, 18 year old breakthrough of like, oh, this is what it is? Do you know what I mean? Like, cause you're pretty young at that point. Like, was there any moment that you felt like, oh, I feel like I'm going to the next level of understanding? Cause we're always constantly learning. I feel like I'm still learning, you know, this many years in.
I mean, it was like a serious group of real professionals.
Terry O'Quinn and incredible.
There's some Hawaiian like life force energy of like some kind of weird mysticism that I'm not like falsely spiritual in that way, especially in regards to work. But I do think that they're energetically speaking about being there, like it like focused the work in a way that like, I mean, there was like people, it was very enjoyable and difficult, but like nobody fucked around. Like, I mean, it never felt like performing. I mean, especially
because you had the sight, it was sight specific. You're in, I mean, there were obviously some sets, but a lot of that stuff that you were doing,
very few. Yeah.
It was in it was on location. It was
always outside and on location.
Yeah. So you're there, you're running, you're doing it. Yeah. There's a camera there, but I'm still running. I'm not running through trees in a soundstage, which I've done before. You know what I mean? Where you're you're in the forest, or like most TV shows, you're in the soundstage. You're in your home and there's just a backdrop with like the city of San Francisco. You know what I mean? And then it looks real.
No trailers. Like nobody ever really, very, very few times that anyone ever like, there was no time. I mean, it was such a massive endeavor that you were just standing outside in the elements and the nature, and it you know, it works on you after a while. You enter into the skin of the thing. It no longer feels like you're pretending. I remember Evangeline Lilly saying she was telling me when she shot the pilot, there's a sequence where in the first episode, they're getting chased by the smoke monster for the first time. Yeah. And she has no idea what it is. She's running away from the
crane, the camera or something. Yeah. Yeah. But I'm saying like the way they were shooting. Mm-hmm.
It's following her through the woods, through the jungle. And she like hides and like in midst like a tree, and she's like hyperventilating. It's pouring rain on her. And she'd said like when they shot that sequence, like it took like many, many hours. And when she got home, this is after like 15 hours of shooting outside in the rain, she had to like run on she was so cold and like so messed up from like being rained on for so long and all this like crazy emotion that she had to like run on the treadmill for like 2.5 hours, just like get her like pulse back, you know? And that kind of stuff happened all the time. Like makes sense. Yeah. It was, I think it being so physical really helps, you know, cause you kind of forgot about what you were doing acting wise.
It takes you out of your head. It takes you out of your head. Because I always find like now, for me, one of the reasons why I really like acting is it's very similar for me to meditating or yoga, because you're really just, I'm present in this moment. Mm-hmm. I'm present in this moment. I'm present in this moment. I just now know how to focus on the moment that's happening. I don't get ahead of myself. I'm talking to this person. I'm trying to get this from this person. I'm talking. And there, the set, the energy, the elements help you get to that meditative state of acting, which is just like, I don't have to perform. I'm just existing in this moment, you know. Yeah. Michael Emerson, what a great actor. I blanked on his name. I mean, another legendary actor, that guy. He kind of came out of nowhere. I remember looking him up. He had done quite a bit. You know, he was kind of a journeyman actor, but that I'm
from New York and had done a lot of theater. I remember I was on set like for his first episode or two, but back when neither he nor I like knew what characters we were playing, and the whole thing was kind of a secret.
Oh, right. Because he was the guy who landed in the balloon.
Benjamin Linus.
Yes.
That's right. And I remember talking to him, and he and I sat like they just we had found ourselves sat next to each other, but just because like our little like cubby hole rooms where we were changing happened to be next to one another, they'd written our names on the front. Yeah. And we introduced ourselves and I said, who are you playing? Because like half the time we didn't know who was who.
Right, right.
And he said, I'm this man that like Henry Gale, I think was his
character. Henry Gale, yeah, yeah.
Got stuck in a net in the tree. And I think I'm only here for an episode or two. Who do you play? Oh, that was how the whole thing started. Yeah.
Episode or two.
His daughter and all that.
Yeah, you had no idea. Who are you playing? You're like, I.
But when.
Alex Russo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the woman who played your mom.
No, Mira. She passed away. I know.
Were you guys pretty. Did you keep in touch after? I mean, I know it's hard with people.
We did keep in touch for some time. And she had a young son named Marcos. And like.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. That
she was, she again, really was an impassioned performance, man.
And very intense. Yeah. And really felt like my mom. I mean, it's crazy. One of the first times that we ever really met in person was like these scenes we had to shoot where we're like supposed to be reunited as like mother and daughter. I remember that scene.
Yeah. Incredible.
And I remember the way that we had shot that. Like, I think it was like, was it in Kualoa? I can't remember, but it might have been one of the locations where they shot some portions of Jurassic Park or something. So you're in this incredible like valley that gives way to these huge, like gigantic mountain ranges, mountaintops. And to get the cast and the crew like to the top of the mountain, they would take some people like on ATVs with all the equipment to go all the way to the top of the mountain. Yeah. There would be some kind of like a flat valley, like a mesa at the top. And I remember one of the first times, because there's such a big cast, you don't meet a lot of the people, even if you're like quote unquote related. One of the first times I was ever on set with her was like at the top of that mountain as like the sun was like rising or setting. I can't remember.
Yeah.
As we're like brought at the top of ATVs to meet like this woman who supposedly is my mother for the first time.
And you
like
never met her as an actor at that point at all.
No, because I don't think we ever crossed paths. We hadn't been in any scenes together up until that point. And it was all kind of, so a lot of weird like life, like art imitating life kind of stuff on that show. Really
did you do like a substitution or something to kind of create this, since you had never met her and this was a reunion? Like, how did you as an actor get into that moment? You're just like, all right, well,
I remember searching her face, and she's so emotive and like so powerful that all I had to do was like, I if somebody cries, I cry. If you know, especially if it's like a parent figure, and you know, you can go into the like Freudian analysis of all that, but like it all like substitution, but I think the writing was so good on that show that, you know, all of like the hopes and dreams of Danielle, like wanting to find her daughter and meet her daughter, like it all kind of led up until that moment, and you could kind of feel it as an actor. And so I guess, you know,
because she had already been on the show for a while. I mean, so she had been,
I think since the first season, she's very intense and in her, she had like a fix it.
Fixated
de regard, what's it in English? Like a very like a focused kind of look about her eyes that like really like connected with your soul. And many actors have that on there. Yeah, that was crazy. Wow.
I think you had to have that on that show, like you said. Yeah, I'm glad. No, I was just thinking about that, like with Alias and Lost and a lot of those big shows of the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. They would just work the crew. Now they like all of these studios have these 12-hour max because so many people, a lot of the crew were getting sleepy on the way home. There were some car accidents. There were some things happening and it just was like enough already. Like on Alias, I remember like 14-hour days, 15-hour days, 16-hour days. And I know on Lost too, right? There were some long days forcing calls. Or did you not experience that?
Yeah, sure. But I mean, it wasn't anything like the Jack and Kate characters, like Fox and Lily Holloway or these guys that are in, you know, practically every scene. I mean, yeah, it was an arduous shoot simply for the physicality of it, that it would take, I mean, I don't know if now by today's standards with like what we're used to and the pace of things as they are and the fact that like a 10 episode or 12 episode season is kind of normal and sort of standard practice now, if that could even, it seems unfathomable when I think about something like Alias or I think about something like Lost. I mean, maybe this is like boring shop talk, but like how the fuck, it's so much work. It's a movie every single week and a half essentially. Cause how many shoot days did you guys have per episode? A week? 7 days,
8 days. Sometimes there'd be two units. Maybe. They do some extras. I was just talking to Jen about that, and because she had a birthday party. Happy birthday, 50th birthday, Jennifer Garner.
I saw on your Instagram. That's right.
Yeah,
she's one of those women that
she's
like
listening. We hope.
She looks so, she hasn't changed at all. And she, no. She has that, certain actors have this, you have that too, like a really wonderful, this is a compliment, like a childlike, like an expression of, like you see that person as they were as a kid, always on their face. It doesn't matter if they're a million years old or 20 years old. It doesn't, it's that like spirit. She has that. You have that.
Where you want to be. These are your friends, but are they real friends? Do they love you as much as me? Are you sure this is where you want to be?
She was just saying that, like, about all of the stunt work and the getting up at 3 a.m, working out, going to set for 16 hours, forcing her call all the time. And she's like, I didn't know. I just always said yes, you know. And she's like, I just, like, it was insane. She wanted to do a lot of her stunts that first year. Not that she like did every single stunt, but she did the stunt. And then
her physicality was so good. She reminds me in a way of like Evangeline, because Evangeline also is very physical, very.
Right, and like she really wanted to do the most she could, probably. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah, she was she was in it, right?
I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they wanted, Evie probably wanted, isn't that what people call her? Evie? I'm pretending we're homies. Evie, I did meet her. She was in New York for the upfront. She was very friendly.
Awesome.
She wanted to probably do as much as she could because, you know, when you're like the running around and all the physicality you had to do in Lost, like the actors can do that, like kicking someone in the face or getting shot or rolling down a hill. Sure, you may have a stunt person do that just because it's like insurance and God forbid something happens or you hit your head or they don't want to lose the actor. It's less about, honestly, it's less about like the actor, like, oh, we're worried about you, as like, oh no, this could shut down production.
No, and also there are things that stunt people do that just look better. I mean, obviously that's their profession. Yeah.
All right, we're going to wrap this up. You were great. Anything else? Is there anything else that you want to say to the did we do iters out in the world? Do you want to give, what advice do you have? Oh, you know what? Actually, I asked, let me see. I may have a question for you from a fan. Hold on. Let me see what I got here. Well, I posted something on the Instagram this morning, but it might not have, here we go. Cassie Randolph, who happens to be my sister, wrote, just finished my Lost rewatch. She watched the entire series. And then there's a Lost podcast by Josh Wiggler and this other guy. And I can't remember his name. Sorry, other guy. And they talked about the show and whatever. And I listened to some of them. He's a really nice guy. I actually talked to him about possibly doing an Alias rewatch podcast, but sounds like a lot of work. She wrote Justice for Alex.
Yes. I agree.
That's not really a question.
I don't know what that means. Well, the show ended in 2010. So that's what, 12 years ago now.
Yeah.
Alex died probably in 2007 or 8.
Were you bummed?
For Alex.
Yeah. Were you bummed when you read that?
Okay.
Did they call you first? Yeah, yeah.
No.
Then we'll wrap it up on this story. Tell me.
Okay, quickly. Back when scripts were messengered, also, you know, Lost was like super hyper secretive. So they would just drop off these unmarked envelopes at my house.
Sure.
And we would get the scripts printed. There was no email. There was no. Oh my God, we're so
real
old.
Bad for the environment, the paper waste. No, I used to have to go pick up my audition sides and scripts at my agents. It was like at Metropolitan I've had the same agent, Dan Barron. He's been on the podcast. I'm sure you've heard it for years. I'd have to pick them up from this lockbox on Wilshire and
that's so wild.
Yeah, in Mid City.
Before show facts? Before the sides being faxed and all that?
No, they were, but like when you had to pick up the full script, they were like, just come on by the office. And then I'd always have to go in and like dog and pony it around. Hey.
Yeah. Just picking up my material. Oh my God. Look at it now with so much nostalgia. It's crazy what it does. And we have so much immediate access to everything.
So tell me the story. So you got the script. Wait, I want to hear the story about, you got the script about you dying on the show?
Yeah, the two episodes or so, you know, and there's no season way to communicate. Season five or season four.
Season four, okay.
I can't remember what episode. Are you kidding me? I was wrecked. I mean, wrecked. I mean, you're always, though I was wrecked. I remember sitting in my bedroom reading a crying, you know. And then
they
didn't call you first.
Like Damon didn't call you, Carlton.
They call me. I mean, like a day or two or so after. But I mean, how do you know when you're going to receive something? Whatever, it was simultaneous, kind of. But I do remember reading it before.
He didn't realize that you had already read it, or he didn't know that you had read. He was like, "Just so you know."
Sure. Right. But then I don't think I'd ever met. I'd met Q's definitely a couple times, but I'd never met Lindelof like in person because everything was so like.
Yeah, they were in L.A. Yeah, yeah.
Segmented. But then, but you know, you get the script sometime in advance. You have like a little bit of time to decompress. You got like a week or two to like mourn the death of your character. Than you show man. Up. You do what you have to do.
Did they give you some applause at the end? And that's a series wrap for Tanya.
There was never a series wrap though, because everybody would always come back, you know? So there was always at least that hope. And then it did happen, which was cool. But yeah, I remember that day very well. Man, it just wrecked.
Well, because also you have, you had all the various, you know, the sideways flashbacks, the side flashbacks, the back flashbacks, the forward flashbacks. We have to go back, Jack. We have to go. Or
which
we have
is
to go
also
back.
so novel when you think about when it was like, now it's like such a common device. You see it in almost every single show is about like, there's some time travel, you know, storyline. But yeah, at the time, it's wild.
I actually found the end of the show much more resonant in the rewatch than I did the first time. Just that concept of like, you know, the way that it was structured in terms of when you didn't, how do I phrase it? Like when something didn't resonate in your life that you didn't need, you could only really survive on the things that you did need. I don't know. There was something about the concept of that, you know, flash sideways that really resonated with me. And then that meetup in the church. I know there was a lot of controversy over the.
It's controversy over the finale of The Sopranos. How do you end something like that? And it lost even more so because there seemed to have been, or at least they intimated that there was like a big, like a true, like a unlocking the real, you know,
the mystery,
the truth about every, but life, it doesn't work that way. You know?
No. And I always say like, it's really about the characters and it's about the journey and it's about the relationship of the characters. That's what the show is. Like, why is everyone so obsessed with the narrative? I'm like, don't be attached to outcomes, people. Like, that's not the reason why you're watching this. What you remember about that show is the relationship between the characters and the way that they evolved. You know what I mean?
And you know, and what's crazy, what everything is set in the pilot. Like, I mean, and I know for a fact, I mean, it's for sure that a lot of that stuff was developed after the fact and it went through a lot of different iterations and casting and all that. But if you really look at the pilot, I mean, it gives you kind of all the answers. It's an incredible feat what they pulled off.
When you say iterations, it makes me think of Saeed saying iterations.
I just watched Naveen in the Dropout show on Hulu. With Holmes, he's great in it.
I auditioned for that. I guess I didn't get it. It's already done filming in my self-tape. Anyway, listen, thank you for coming on. You did it. Everyone go see Deep Blue Sea number 3. Is that out yet?
No, it is already out. You can watch it on Amazon or you know anything.
Check out Goliath, all 5 seasons on Amazon, 5 seasons, right?
4 seasons.
Check out all 4 seasons.
But especially season 1.
Season 1's the best. Yeah. And check out Deep Blue Sea. Check out Lost. What else we got to check out to see the canon?
That's good.
You've done a lot. What about the one where you were doing this, you know, like the swashbuckling? I never saw that. That one looked good.
We don't need to turn over every stone.
I'm here to support you. All right. And we're looking for. Thanks, everybody, for coming to.
Did we do it? Did we do it? Kyle and Kevin gonna shoot the shit. It's the thing. Did we do it? Kevin and Cage coming your way. That's what they always do.
Good night, everybody.
Please like and subscribe. Please
please like and subscribe. It will really help me.